This is the Meridian Podcast. On Tuesday this week, voters across the United States headed to the polls to vote in the midterm elections.
Seats in both the House of Representatives and the Senate were up for grabs, along with a number of state governorships. But for some, this election was about much more, with many prominent US politicians, such as former President Obama, suggesting to voters that the future of US democracy was on the ballot.
Held at the midway point of every president's term, these elections are often seen as a referendum on the performance of the president, and famously, the party in control of the White House performs poorly. But this year, the picture looks a little different.
Many expected a red wave to completely wash away the Democrats' control of the House and Senate, but Republicans are only on track for likely a slim majority in the House, and at the time of recording, control of the Senate still hangs in the balance.
Although we don't quite know who will take control of Congress, the expected red wave doesn't seem to have washed ashore.
On today's show, we're joined by two student journalists from the University of Georgia to discuss where the race for control of Congress currently stands and what the results we have so far tell us about the state of American politics. I'm Amelia Hardy.
I'm Michael Gorin, and this is the Meridian Podcast. And welcome back to the Meridian Podcast. And today our episode is going to be focused on the midterm elections, and it's a bit of a midterm election special. And we have some very special guests all the way from the United States, and that's Erin Deal and Maddie Franklin, who are student journalists at the University of Georgia's student newspaper, The Red and Black. And it's really nice to be joined by you guys today.
Yeah, it's nice to be here. Thank you so much for inviting us.
Yes, thanks for having us.
Before we get started, we usually do sort of introductions to get to know our guests and to give the listeners a chance to get to know you. So if we start with you, Maddie, can you just basically explain what the Red and Black is and what your role is as well, if that's all right?
Yeah, sure. Well, the Red and Black is, as you said, the University of Georgia's, it's a student-run newspaper, and we're independent from UGA, but as you can imagine, pretty much everyone involved are UGA students, aside from some professional staff members, and we are just tasked with kind of covering the landscape of campus and Athens as a community at large. And then I am the editor-in-chief for the fall semester. So EICs kind of change each semester. And really my role is to oversee editorial direction of both our print and digital content and just manage our newsroom.
And I'm Erin. I'm the elections reporter, which is a position on the news desk here at the Red and Black. And essentially, I've been covering Georgia politics in the midterm, which I'm sure we'll talk about later, but the governor's race, senator's race, and then all the way down to the local level. So following these candidates when they get close to our university and tracking them along their campaign and seeing what students and people in our community have to say about these people who are running.
Well, yeah, it's really, really great to have you both. I'm sure you'll give our listeners a really interesting perspective. But just before we get into who's won, who's lost, what we still are waiting to know at this point, would you mind just explaining for people who might not be so familiar
what a midterm election actually is? So who and also what measures are on the ballot?
Yeah. So the midterm happens every 2 years. So in Congress, it's bicameral. So there's two houses. So the House of Representatives, you have 2 year term. So every midterm, every representative is voted on again. So there's 435. So lots of midterms in that sense. And then for the Senate, they're 6 year terms. So a third of the Senate is in each midterm. So every 2 years. And so in Georgia, there was, of course, the representatives were in the midterm, and then there was a big Senate race. So that was a big point of contention. And a lot of the issues that were on the ballot were women's reproductive rights. Supreme Court overturned a pretty historic decision involving abortion. And then also there was some issues with voting in 2020. So that was another big point. And then also gun rights and gun control were on the ballot. So that was something that Americans came out to the polls to have their voice in.
To add on to that, another big kind of marquee race was the governor seat that was up for grabs. And that person who serves as governor serves a four-year term, just happened to land in this year, along with all those other seats.
Yeah, there is so much up for grabs, isn't there? There's sort of Senate seats, also the House, and also governors, as you just said. But if you could sort of give an overall picture right now, I know it's quite difficult because we're recording and it's currently Wednesday evening here in the UK. It's just gone 9:41 PM. So it's very difficult to say. We can only make sort of tentative conclusions. But what is the state of play as we speak? Who's come out on top, do you think, at least from the results that we have?
Sure. Well, in Georgia, it seems thus far that the Republicans have come on top. So the conservatives, Brian Kemp was just reelected as our governor. He is a staunch conservative. He has supported a 6-week ban on abortions, gun rights, just a lot of things. And he defeated his opponent from 2018 again. And then I would say some other states that are up for grabs are Pennsylvania was a big race. Nevada, Wisconsin was a big one. So I know a lot of Republicans had said that there was going to be a red wave across the country, meaning that they'd take back a lot of the legislature, but it's been pretty even thus far.
I can really just speak for Georgia. It does seem like, people were really interested in this sort of like swing nature of the state as a battleground one. And it does seem as if we will continue to be a sort of red state. That I think the race that is least on my mind, and I think a lot of other people's mind, is this U.S. Senate seat and how that will play out between Walker and Warnock.
Well, they were projecting that Senate seat is going to go to a runoff election on the 6th of December. So again, that's something that UK citizens might not understand. So for the benefit of them, would you mind explaining what a runoff election is and how it came to be?
Of course, yeah. So like Maddie said, there's two main candidates, Herschel Walker, who's the Republican, and Raphael Warnock, who is the incumbent and he's the Democrat. So in Georgia, to win the seat, you have to get over 50% of the vote. And there's also a third party candidate. I believe he got less than 1% of the vote, but still it broke it down so that each candidate got less than 50%. So the two will race again without the third party candidate and see if there will be more than 50% so that they'll be elected in December.
Yeah, that's nice to clear up, because for UK listeners, again, like a runoff is quite a strange concept, especially considering it's like a month away. But Erin, as you said before, it's not been much of a red wave. It has been more of a red trickle, or so it's been reported. But that said, there are still some really key races that haven't been announced. What are those races in the Senate, and what are the significance of them?
I would say that Georgia is, we might be biased, but Georgia is one of the biggest ones. It's, again, with the overturn of Roe v. Wade, a lot of people are thinking that this race and these representatives are going to challenge the state-by-state basis of women's reproductive rights. So, yeah, I think people were fully expecting that Republican values were going to take way, and there's been a lot of change over this past summer, but like you said, it's just been a trickle. So it'll be interesting to see if there's continual runoffs, just seeing how that goes.
So what do you think was the reason for there being a sort of red trickle rather than a red wave? Because the president's party in a midterm elections historically doesn't do particularly well, but Democrats seem to have sort of surpassed expectations. So what do you think the main reason for that is?
That's a good question. I think it's just sort of the nature of the landscape of where the country is right now. I think particularly in the summer with the overturning of Roe v. Wade, I think that put a lot of people on notice, and particularly with the reaction from people who were running for office, the way they responded to that. I think it showed people that, possibly some of the stances that they had held before needed to be kind of called into question. I think it just kind of signals sort of a massive shift in the way that we think about, at least what I feel to be basic human rights. I think that could be a big part of why we have seen this, but I don't know that there's ever really one thing that can account for that.
Yeah, definitely. And it's interesting that you mentioned rights there. Of course, earlier in summer, we had the overturning of Roe v. Wade, which, of course, seemed to rally the Democratic base, or at least we would assume that. That sort of momentum seemed to sort of fizzle out. And then the economy, as with all elections, seemed to sort of come to the forefront. But how important do you think abortion was in this race? Because it seems to have benefited quite a few Democratic candidates.
I would say it's pretty important, but like Maddie said, there are a variety of issues on the ballot. Like in the United States, the Second Amendment is the right to bear arms. And I think in Georgia, a lot of Georgians take that very seriously. And there have been various mass shootings throughout the years, honestly, and seeing how people react to certain politicians wanting to amend those rights, that's brought a lot of people out to vote. But I would say a big key factor in this election has been the youth vote. And I think young people are really trying to defend those reproductive rights in terms of abortion. I would say that was a main thing that I spoke to young voters about, that they really found important to them and to the candidate that they supported.
Yeah. And then if I could add on to that, actually at the Red and Black, we conducted a poll to see what people were feeling were the kind of most important issues when they went to the polls, and women's reproductive rights was top of mind for people. So it seemed to be the number one issue that they were thinking of when going to the polls, and they ranked this as number one most important issue for them. So we had about 170 responses, and that was what our findings were. But I think also it showed, just kind of looking at what some of the other states and seeing that the right to abortion was on the ballot for some, and seeing that support for having that right be kind of ingrained within the state constitution really showed that this was an issue that seemed to energize a lot of people on both sides of the aisle. And I think that it was just, like we were saying, a really, really big issue for both main parties, major parties.
Yeah, absolutely. Abortion, especially as somebody looking at the election from sort of an outsider's perspective, seemed to be such an important issue, obviously from when it was triggered by the Dobbs decision over the summer. But another thing that I found interesting is that across the map, people seem to have almost rejected the idea of extremism. And you can't talk about an election in America at the moment without talking about the former president, President Trump, and many of his candidates who was election deniers seem to have had quite a rough night. Dr. Oz lost to John Fetterman in Pennsylvania, and Mastriano lost to Shapiro for the governor's race in that state as well. So how much of an impact do you think that had on the election with people rejecting Trumpism?
I think it had a pretty big impact on last night's election. People have said that American politics are more divisive than ever. And I think, especially with the fraudulent election claims, that's caused a lot more divide between the two parties. And again, from the individuals I've spoke with, they lean more moderate, and they want a candidate that's more moderate. And Donald Trump has not emulated that for them. So the candidates that are backed by them, that could be a negative. There were a lot of people in Georgia that were saying that they would split their ticket, meaning that they would vote for the Republican governor who has outwardly said that he dislikes Donald Trump and that he claimed that the election was valid and fair, versus Herschel Walker did support President Trump and I believe still does. So I think that was a pretty major impact on last night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, it was very interesting to see Dr. Oz, who's sort of this TV personality, not too sort of dissimilar to Donald Trump, really, was basically trounced. But also, of course, we can't ignore DeSantis. DeSantis is the Republican governor of Florida who won re-election and is a key challenger to Donald Trump. Because although there were some sort of losses for MAGA Republicans last night, if you don't like Donald Trump, but you are in the Republican Party, you probably were pretty satisfied last night. I wonder if you could just explain to the listeners, does this midterm election sort of boost him in any way? Would you agree with that, Maddie?
I definitely think it does boost him. I mean, we saw that he has been reelected. It seems as, you know, if people are voters in Florida, you know, have really taken a shine to him, despite some of the controversy surrounding his views and things that he's backed. So, like you said, there were some losses in other ways for people backed by Trump, but then some wins as well. I think in comparison, when we look at like DeSantis versus someone like Kemp, Kemp seems to go a bit more neutral and not really play the fence, but he seems to appeal a lot more to conservatives who have rejected Trumpism, like you said, but our voting bases in Georgia and Florida are very different.
Yeah. And it is very interesting. And I know that Ron DeSantis, at his rally after he declared victory, his supporters were actually chanting 2 more years because they know that ultimately a governor's term is supposed to be 4 years, but that they definitely expect him to run for president in 2 years' time in 2024. And also on the topic of DeSantis, Donald Trump has also said that if DeSantis does decide to run in 2024, that that decision would hurt him very badly, I think he said. So kind of a veiled threat from Donald Trump. And I just wondered, do you think that at this moment, Donald Trump feels particularly threatened? Because obviously the MAGA wing of the party have seemed to dominate over the last few years. But do you think that that dominance is potentially slipping? Would you agree with that, Erin?
I think definitely. I think President Trump wouldn't like to admit that he would be intimidated by DeSantis, but I think DeSantis has become somewhat of a national celebrity as well outside of Florida. He has pretty big recognition across the nation. So I think Republicans are going to have to pick a candidate, especially given that the satisfaction rate with Joe Biden is not relatively high at this point. So some Democrats may come over too. Again, like you said, they're both still quite conservative. So it'll be interesting to see how everything pans out in 2024 and if either of them decide to run.
I actually have just had a notification on my phone. It's just popped up now that Biden has said that it is his intention to run again in 2024. So do you think he's looked at these midterms and thought, I haven't done as badly as I maybe thought I would, that sort of people are saying that we were? Do you think that's encouraging him to possibly make another run like he's saying he's going to?
I think so. Having that base support in Congress would be how he passes his legislation into law. He needs those other politicians to be there for him, to support him, to lift him up and make it seem like the party's aligned. Like we've said, the MAGA Republicans and then other Republicans may split when it comes to the primary and the presidential. So seeing how Biden plays out and if any Democrats will go against him or lift him up will definitely rally the troops back home and see who comes out to vote for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. On the topic of Joe Biden, of course, now, as we've just said, he's planning to run again. But obviously, we don't have the House results just yet, although it's at least on 538, which is sort of a prominent polling site. It seems as though it's leaning Republican and the Senate is pretty much a dead heat. If the Democrats lose the House, what sort of impact could that have for the next 2 years of Joe Biden's presidency? Is that something that is a worry for Democrats that heading into 2024, they just might not be able to pass anything.
I definitely think that is a huge worry of Democrats and, you know, is the reason why this election in particular was, you know, it rallied a lot of people and was a common kind of talking point for Democrats and their backed candidates. So I think, you know, if that is lost, as Aaron said, Biden would just not be able to get anything through, which could, you know, even though it's not expected that across party aisles, they will support the opposite party's legislature. I think it could impact voters and, again, his approval rating if things that they want to be addressed, especially when you earlier spoke or mentioned the economy, which is another really huge thing at the moment. I think it could really impact his chance of a re-election.
Yeah, so I just want to briefly touch on something that in the UK, and I'm sure in the US, has worried you guys a lot, is the prevalence of sort of election deniers on the ballot now. I think last time I checked, I think it's around 210 people have been elected. So they were into Republican positions in the House, the Senate, or in gubernatorial elections that have questioned the results of the 2020 election. Now that, at least from a UK perspective, but I'm sure you guys will also agree, is extraordinary and it doesn't bode well heading into sort of 2024. But how worried are you guys? And sort of from the perspective of an American student who votes and is involved in politics, if you can sort of gauge how people feel about that, is there a genuine worry that if there is another election and perhaps the Democrats win, that we might see January the 6th part two and essentially more political violence? Is that something that among your circles and sort of in general you think is a worry?
I would say it depends on the Republican that would run in 2024. If it's somebody like a MAGA Republican who just thinks it's their way or the highway, I think that could be a potential threat. Also, one of the big epicenters of the election fraud claims was in Georgia, near Atlanta, our capital. So hearing what our Secretary of State, who somewhat oversees these elections, the protocols they've put in place, I haven't heard as many questions about the potential January 6th part two. I hope that would not happen again. It was an attack on our democracy, and I think that was very conservative group of people who are not the typical Americans. They're extremists, as we said. So I think it all depends on how the next 2 years pan out.
I think, like, you know, in the span of 2 years, a lot could go on, and we don't really know how the political landscape and just social landscape will shift and change. In my circles, I have not heard anyone express any worries about this. I think a lot of people viewed what happened on January 6th as something completely abhorrent and just was really shamed and refuted by people in both major parties. So I would think it would be a worry, especially for candidates who are running. But in terms of just kind of citizens, I don't think this is something that, and again, just speaking for like my circles and what I've heard from people that I know, it's not a particularly like big worry heading out of this election season and then into the 2024 season.
I want to touch on something you just said there, Maddie. So you mentioned about potentially candidates being worried when they're running. People may have seen the awful attack on Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi's husband. So whilst there might not be something sort of on such a scale as January 6th, do you think the polarized environment that American politics is in at the moment is possibly dehumanizing politicians to the point where people are more likely to incite violence on maybe a smaller scale?
Yeah, I definitely think politicians have become dehumanized. But side effect, I guess, of some of those more far views. I think that, you know, and on those smaller scales as well, I think people are worried about that. I think when you think about, you know, political violence and that being incited is always going to create some type of anxiety in people, whether they're candidates or not, or just simply involved citizens who do engage in things like voting or beyond. So I think, I don't know, I really love that question because I think it's really interesting to think about how divisive things are and how that has impacted people on just a interpersonal level, the way that we communicate and the way that we view each other and our elected officials. And I'm not sure that I see that dying down. I think that in response to the whole Trump era, that was really just kind of birthed there. It was simmering under the surface, I think, and really bubbled over. And I'm not sure that a lid will be put on that anytime soon. So yeah, it's an interesting thing.
Oh, I agree with you. I think they've definitely become dehumanized. Seeing these people are in constitutions said to represent the people, and then they're dehumanized, as you said. So it's been an interesting thing to follow.
Yeah, no, it is a really worrying development. Thankfully, we haven't seen anything violent today or yesterday, but we'll see how that sort of changes. Before we finish up, unfortunately, we haven't got too long left. And I don't want to make you guys make any predictions. I know that can be in politics a tricky business, but a question that is on a lot of people's minds, at least in the UK, is how long will this go on before we know who's won the Senate and who's won the House? Because, of course, voting stopped yesterday, but it's dragged on overnight and into today. And we've not had too many major updates. So if you could just tentatively give us an idea of, firstly, when we can sort of expect this to be wrapped up, and maybe also, if you wouldn't mind, although feel free not to, out of sort of Nevada and Arizona, particularly two swing states, which are really important in the Senate race, and we don't know yet. How do you both see those sort of turning out as well?
Yeah, so I, in terms of my prediction on how long this will drag on, I think time and time again, we just see that these things can go on for a really, really long time. If not today, then I would expect some runoffs, which again delays this, you know, for another month. And if not, I don't know for Nevada and Arizona which way those will go. But I think, as we were saying, there's not necessarily a red wave going on, but I might put my money on it going more red than blue, but not certain. And yeah,
I would echo everything Maddie said. It's, to speak for myself, I've been following the Georgia race more than Nevada and Arizona, but they are so close. I would also have to agree with her point about it potentially going in more of a red direction. But in terms of counting the votes and seeing when things are all wrapped up, as you said, the Georgia runoff is on December 6th. So hopefully within the next month, all of these politicians will be sworn in January. So worst comes to worst, we'll know in December or January. But yeah, it's hard to tell. These things are really dragging along.
And it's always so interesting as a UK voter, because we know our results almost instantly after the polls close. So it's always so interesting to kind of look across the pond and then see that it takes sort of days and days for all of the ballots to come in. Anyway,
must
Maddie,
be nice, guys.
So the immediate exit polls. Anyway, Maddie and Erin, thank you so, so much for coming on and talking to us. It's been brilliant to get your perspective on everything going on. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Yes, thank you so much again for inviting us. It was a pleasure to be on.
Yes, thank you guys so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Meridian Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as we enjoyed creating it. If you liked what you heard, why not subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts so our latest episode lands in your feed. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram and TikTok too, at the Meridian Podcast. And if you've got an idea for an episode or would like to appear, send us an email at at meridianpodcast@gmail.com. This episode was presented and edited by Michael Gorham and Amelia Hardy. The theme music is Impending Uncertainty by Gavin Luke and Solar Flare, licensed by Creative Commons. Until next time, thanks for listening.